That reading this morning from 2 Kings 20 and verses 12 through 19, it's also found some connection with that in Isaiah 39, but there's some interesting things that take place here. In fact, you'll note in the first part of the chapter that Hezekiah is deathly sick. In fact, God tells him, prepare, get your house in order, because you're going to die. And Hezekiah takes time to pray to God and beseech Him in tears to spare his life. And God consents and gives him 15 years more to live. As I was reading the context of that, and a couple of verses popped out in my mind, and I thought, I think there's another sermon here. In fact, I was thinking, I think I could call that sermon, Why Sometimes It's Good for Good Men to Die Early. Because Manasseh is his son, and his son Manasseh is born in that 15-year period of time. Interesting. But there were some interesting things. He makes comment there too as well. But anyway, let's get back to the story. Hezekiah was about to die, and he prays, and God is going to extend his life for 15 years. And the king of Babylon has heard about Hezekiah's sickness, and he sends his emissary to bring a gift to Hezekiah. And while they're there, Hezekiah brings the enemy of Israel into his home, and he shows them everything that he has, all of his treasures, everything in his home. And as a result, the prophet comes to him and tells him that because you have allowed this to take place, Babylon, the king of Babylon, is going to come, and he's going to carry all of these things off one of these days. And he carried into Babylonian captivity. You see, visitors, when they come into our home, they get a concept of our life, our home life, and by what they see. It has been said, tell me what is in your home by choice, and I will tell you your home life. The names in your guest book, the titles of the books on your shelves, the magazines, the entertainment, the conversations, the love, the companionship, the hospitality, the parental example, those things that are going on in your home, they say something about your life at home. And it's at home that we let our guard down the most. And where our real character and our real person comes to light. Truly, there is no place like home. William Goldsmith Brown said, the sweetest sounds of mortals given are heard in mother, home, and heaven. It is expressed also in poetry and song, home, sweet home. God decreed the home and home life. The very first home in the Garden of Eden was a paradise in Genesis 2. It was the perfect home, but this perfect home was wrecked by sin. And so it is today as well. The question is, what have they seen in your house? It is a vital question even today. And so I want to consider with you this morning for a few moments some things that God's Word teaches that should be in our homes. Authority should be in our homes. Cheryl loves that word, authority. The whole time we were dating, she really loved that word, authority, because I kept bringing it up over and over again. Well, the Bible is the authority, or Jesus is the authority in the home. The husband is to be the head of the wife. Ephesians 5, Paul makes a very good comparison between the church and the home when he says in chapter 5 and verses 22 and 23, wives, be subject to your husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is head of the wife, all as Christ also is head of the church, he himself being the Savior of the body. Longfellow likened a woman to the cord of a bow, being bent by the bow, but yet responding to it. You see, one is useless without the other. In fact, in Genesis 2, we find that woman was made to be a helpmeet for the man. Ben Franklin compared a single man to the odd half of a pair of scissors. As I was thinking about putting an overhead together for this, but we had something else to do yesterday evening, and so I didn't get that accomplished. But we've got, and of course, I was planning on taking a picture of a pair of scissors we have. You can set them in just a way, you can take them apart, and you got one half of it, and it just doesn't work real well that way. And the home doesn't work very well when husband and wife are not working together. Training their children to respect that authority. It is a vital to our society that children teach their, that parents teach their children to respect authority. The proverb writer in Proverbs 22 and verse 6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." Again, the proverb writer says in chapter 23 and verse 13, "Do not hold back discipline from a child. Although you beat him with the rod, he will not die." And I know there are a lot of people in this world today, especially in this country, that would just cringe at the very thought of that idea. In Proverbs 29 and verse 15, "The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child who gets his own way brings shame to his mother." And I guarantee you, it was just yesterday sitting in Sam's Club, eating some sushi and drinking Diet Mountain Dew with it, that I got to see a child who was bringing shame to its mother. You see it everywhere and every day, these kind of things. A child that does not receive reproof, instruction, and correction, they bring shame. But when you give those things, the child will gain wisdom and understanding and their behavior. I remember, probably close to 30 years ago now, my first wife, Darlene, was babysat, and of course, I was preaching and I was at home in my office most days. And there was a day in which she wanted to take all of the kids to Hardee's. That was just about 10 miles from where we were living. And so we got them all together. We got them in the vehicle. We took them to Hardee's and we had a great time and everybody enjoyed it. And we had fun and we came back home and everything was good, and Mom and Dad came. Of course, I think they knew that we were going to do this. I can't remember exactly, but I'm pretty sure they knew we were going to take them. But anyway, one of the things they said was, "Well, how did you keep them all under control?" Well, because they had already learned that at Darlene's house, you behave yourself. You do what Darlene says. And of course, when we got to Hardee's, Raymond said, "You all will go in and be quiet and respectful and behave and do what you're told, and we'll have a great time." And they did. And we did. I also remember a time when one of those young babysitting kids loved to go with Raymond to deliver the article to the newspaper. Sean. Sean was a favorite child. He was a terrible child to take care of, but he is a favorite child and will always be, in my mind, a favorite child. I remember one day getting him and William together. We were going to go take the article to the newspaper, and he'd been having some difficulty obeying Mom and Dad about buckling the seatbelt. So we get in the Isuzu, that old white Isuzu, and we're going to go, and he doesn't want to buckle his seatbelt. And I said, "Boys, we need to go back in the house for a moment." So we got out of the vehicle. We went back to the house. I said, "William, you go get in the truck. Sean, we'll see you later. Close the door." We got in the truck. We left. We came back. Never, ever again had a trouble with him buckling his seatbelt. Training. Discipline. You don't have to spank a child. You don't have to beat a child to train them. Sometimes it may be necessary, but you don't have to every time. Instruction, training, you see, those things do work. It is capable of working. proverb writer in Proverbs 1 and verses 7 and through 9 says, Proverbs 1, 7 through 9 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. Indeed, they are a graceful wreath to your head and ornaments about your neck. They will make you look beautiful. They'll make you look good. I remember sitting in a Colonel Sanders one time in near Chicago, Illinois. All of our children are there. We're eating Kentucky Fried Chicken. Ooh, yeah. Good stuff. Mashed potatoes and gravy. An old couple left, and as they were leaving, the gentleman said, it is so good to see children so well behaved. Oh, man. After they left, we got out in the car and I said, kids, did you hear what that gentleman said? That's the greatest thing in the world. That, boy, I appreciate that so much. I'm so proud of you. Friends, we've got to do those kind of things. That's the kind of thing that needs to be seen in our house. In Ephesians 6, in Ephesians 6 and 1 through 4, the Apostle Paul emphasizes the responsibility of fathers and parents and children. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you, and that you may live long on the earth. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. Proper teaching is the first step in discipline. In fact, the Greek word here, I practiced this, and now I'm not going to be able to do it. Anyway, it means the word for discipline. In fact, the word discipline here means instruction, discipline. It stresses training by act. The word instruction means putting in mind that which is ministered by the Lord. Putting into the mind of your children what God says is important. Many do not teach their children because parents or children are just too busy. In fact, one gentleman made the comment, too many electric switches and too few peach tree switches. Well, I don't know about electric switches because now it's moved way on beyond electric switches. Now it's games on the iPhone or whatever other kind of phone you might have. And children who spend all day sitting in a chair playing games on a handheld device or on a computer have no social skills because they've spent all of their time playing this game. Don't want to go outside because they want to play this game. Children need to go outside. I remember playing cowboys and Indians. I remember my brother throwing at me and hitting me in the nose and breaking my nose a baseball bat that we'd made out of a tree limb. We went and did things outside like that. I remember breaking my hand on his jaw, but we did those kind of things. Twice. He insulted my girlfriend. Anyway. That wasn't a good thing. It wasn't a good thing. My mother was embarrassed. You see, there's the proverb coming true. When children don't respect their parents, they embarrass them. Yeah, they will do that. But think about it. It's important that we instruct our children. Still, other parents do not know enough about God's Word to teach them. And it will make, and what's worse is they make no effort to learn. I keep remembering the fact that there were parents who were amazed that Darlene had such control over those kids. Now, please don't misunderstand. There were times when they got rowdy. And sometimes they had to sit in corners. In fact, I gave Sean the rocking chair the timeout rocking chair because he earned it. I told him that when I gave it to him. I said, you earned this, son. You spent so much time in it, I think there's an impression there from your behind. Yeah. Spent time. In fact, I remember Sean again and William. I remember they were fussing or doing something one day, and I told them, boys, come here. You stand there at that wall, put your nose to the wall, put your hand behind your back, and you, Sean, you go over there and you stand at that wall, put your nose to the wall, and put your hand behind your back, and you would have thought we'd have spanked them with an inch of their life. They shed more tears in the few moments they stood there with their nose to the wall than I think you could have got at them if you had paddled them. Those are the kind of things you just got to learn in bringing up children, those things. You see, if they don't learn respect for mom and dad, they will have absolutely no respect for civil authority. None whatsoever. It must be taught by parents. In fact, I remember my son Tony. He was really good about things like this. We'd be driving down the road and he'd say, Dad, how fast you going? Because he's looking over my shoulder. You see, that's one of the ways you teach them respect for authority, by your actions. By your actions. How fast you driving, Dad? What are you saying about the police officer, Dad? Romans 13. Romans 13 in verses 1 through 5. Paul addresses this idea of civil authority. Romans 13, verses 1 through 5. Every person is to be in subjection to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. Therefore, whoever resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who have opposed will receive condemnation upon themselves. For rulers are not a cause for fear of good behavior, but for evil. Do you want to have no fear of authority? Do what is good, and you will have praise from the same. For it is a minister of God to you for good, but if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword for nothing. For it is a minister of God, an avenger who brings wrath on the one who practices evil. Therefore, it is necessary to be in subjection not only because of wrath, but also for conscience sake. If you don't want to be afraid of the police officer, then obey the law. Isn't that just pretty simple? That's just kind of straightforward, isn't it? It absolutely is. That nose still wants to try escape. We'll try to corral it. It's that simple, friends. It is that simple. I grew up, I had the pleasure, I guess if you could say that, I had the pleasure of growing up during the hippie movement. I remember being in high school and being told that girls didn't like guys who wore white socks. It was a few years later that I realized it was stupid to be concerned about what color the socks were that you wore. You see, the hippie movement wasn't about being different. They all said we need to be different. We can't be like mom and dad. We've got to be different. And they were certainly different, and they still are really different. But it wasn't being about being different. It was about being different alike. They wanted you to be different, but they wanted you to conform to their difference. That's really all it was, and millennials are no different. The same rebellion of the hippie years is seen in the millennial generation as well. And who's at fault? Mom and dad. It's mom and dad that are at fault. And we need to understand that, and we need to accept that, and we need to do something about it. You cannot wait until your child is 13 years old and then try to discipline them. It is not going to work. It's not going to happen. And in fact, if it does work, it will have caused you a lot of pain and heartache to get it accomplished. Guaranteed. There ought to be, and we're going to, I may have to preach the rest of this tonight. That's kind of scary, isn't it? Because that was just the first topic. Anyway, another thing that should be seen in your home, that God expects to be seen in the home, is love. Again, Ephesians 5, verses 22 and 20, or through 33. Notice there, in fact, I love this passage. It seemed like the last passage I read is the one I love the most. But anyway, just think about what this says. We read the first three verses there, beginning at verse 22. Let's drop down to verse 25, because husbands seem to get left out in sermons on this anyway. But we're going to catch on them. Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her. Notice the kind of love that a husband is to have for his wife. He is to be willing to lay down his life for his wife. But more than that, a husband is to love his wife when she's not very lovable. I want you to notice here that God does not make any qualifications to this. He does not say you love your wife when she respects you. You love your wife when she honors you. You love your wife when she does this or that. He says, love your wife. And when she corrects you, you say, yes, dear, that was right. I was wrong. Because I guarantee you, most of the time, that's exactly what the thing needs to be done. Because you were wrong. Because you love your wife. So that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present to himself the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and blameless. You're to keep your wife pure. That's what that's saying. And we need to appreciate those things. So husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. A man who says bad things about his wife doesn't love himself. And I've heard some husbands say some bad things about their wives. That man doesn't really like himself. He wouldn't be saying that about his wife. Because he chose her. You have a wife, you picked her. That reflects on you, doesn't it? It absolutely does. For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it, cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church. That's why I brought sushi home yesterday for Cheryl. Of course, I like it too, so a win-win there. Yeah, you do special things. You get flowers once in a while. Sometimes you need to be reminded to get flowers once in a while because men seem to forget that real easy. Flowers are really good. Make your life even better if you think about it. For this reason, quoting from the Old Testament, Genesis, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and shall be joined to his wife, and the two shall be one flesh, or become one flesh. They'll become one. They'll become intertwined, interconnected. When Darlene died, my life was broken. It was broken. It's fixed now. It's fixed. This mystery is great, but I am speaking with reference to Christ and the church. Nevertheless, each individual also among you also is to love his own wife even as himself. I want you to notice there that he mentions that two times. He makes this a similar statement here twice of loving himself or loving his wife as he loves himself, cares for himself, takes care of himself. He makes that, husbands must have a problem there. Because he repeats it. And the wife must see to it that she respects her husband. True love will be shown by deeds. A mother who does not seek her own needs, but those of her family. 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 5, when he was making qualifications. A father who provides the needs of his family. 1 Timothy 5 and verse 8, but if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially for those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Even unbelievers will provide for their own. There can be a problem, though, here. A wife who is willingly at the beck and call of her husband and can allow him to take advantage over her and act selfishly. We need to be careful about that. And husbands that try to anticipate their wife's every wish and exhibit love, which he thinks is Christ-like, she may be tempted to impose on him things that she ought not, that God would not permit. In fact, might even expect him to pamper her. Cheryl's not worried about that. I love her. She's special. She's a special woman. Good companionship is another thing that we need to see in a family, in a home. You know, a key and a lock, they form a functioning unit. You can't really use one without the other. You need them both. A husband is told to live with his wife in an understanding way as the weaker vessel, 1 Peter 3 and verse 7. I want you to note there that it does not say that she's inferior. We've got a lot of people in this world who think that that emphasizes that women, that God thinks that women, or that Peter thinks that women are inferior to men. That's not what this is saying. It is just simply saying she's more delicate. I know Cheryl's much more delicate than I am. I'm a hard old man. She's a soft woman. And she ought to be. And I ought to treat her, and I ought to understand her in that way. And sometimes I don't. And when she says something about it, I say, yes, you're right. I was wrong. Because that's what we should be doing. We have to do that. And I have to think about it. Sometimes I have to think about that a while. And then I come back and say, yep, you're right. I was wrong. A wife is not to be a brawling woman or contentious, the proverb writer tells us. In fact, in Proverbs 25 and verse 24, it says, it's better to live in a corner of the roof than in a house shared with a contentious woman. And I think that in the King James Version here, that Proverbs 25 and verse 24 uses the term brawling, but verse 15 of chapter 27 uses contentious. The truth is, the word is the same in both passages. I really don't understand why they thought that they needed to use two different terms to define the word that is used here. It simply means strife and contention. That's what she is. He says in chapter 27 and verse 15, a constant dripping on the day of steady rain and a contentious woman are alike. It'll drive you insane. And you think about a dripping faucet. Just drip, 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 drip. By the end of the day, it's just bellowing in your head. That's what he's saying. A woman's not to be that kind of person. This is a relationship that works together. This companionship must be carried into our social and recreational and religious activities. People ought to see a good relationship, a very loving relationship, a caring relationship. What kind of literature do they see in your home? When someone comes into your home, what kind of literature do they see? Bible? Do they see the Bible out? Do they see certain movies? What do those movies contain? I don't know when this was, but it was just here recently. Either I read this or I heard someone talking about it. They were talking about a man who was dying, and he motioned to his friend to come near. The friend came over and he motioned him down, and he bent down to hear what the friend was going to say, and the gentleman who was dying said, "Delete my web browser." What is on your computer? My browser history? Is there anything on there that you wouldn't want your family to know? You wouldn't want others to know? It's something to think about. I understand, because I'm on the internet, I understand that you get all kinds of things, and I'm not sure how they know all of this, but they know it somehow. They know I'm an older man. I'm not sure how they do, but I keep getting these emails, and you have to, let me just clue you in here. Jeff could probably do it better than I can, but there is a way that you can go down and or on your computer, you can tell that is going to be, junk. And so if you ever get it, it goes to the junk. Well, I've been getting these, Russian girls want to meet older men in Omaha. What in the world would a young woman want with an old man in Omaha? I can't even imagine. Money, I guess. Japanese girls want to meet old. But that's just a fraction of the things. But you can make that go into your junk mail, and you don't have to see it. And I tell you what, every now and then I go over into my trash or into my junk to see if something's got there that shouldn't have been there. Boy, am I glad I've got that. Because I'm just overwhelmed at all of the junk that's in there that is junk. It just blows my mind what is out there on the internet. It is just ugly. As one reads, so he thinks. The proverb writer in Proverbs 23 in verse 7 at the beginning, he says, "For as he thinks within himself, so is he." What I put into this is going to come out of this, or out of this. Isn't it? This is like a computer. You put junk into it, you're going to get junk out of it. You put good things into this, you're going to get good things out of it. That's the only way. My computer only works as well as I work with it. Same thing with my brain, with my heart. I must work with it in the appropriate way. I need to put good things in. I need to have good books in my library. I need to have good movies on my shelf. I need to have good material on my computer. Which do you think will ultimately win? Good or bad? In 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33, Paul says, "Do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals." You keep bad company, it's going to corrupt you. And I've heard people, and I probably have said it myself even when I was a young person, "Well, I'm just trying to bring them up." It's a whole lot harder to bring them up than for them to bring you down. It surely is. I got brought down a time or two in my life. I learned the hard way. Friends, it's not good. Evil will win out in that situation. We cannot allow it to have that opportunity. And hospitality, oh my, we need to be hospitable people. Paul says in Romans 12 and verse 13, contributing to the needs of the saints, practicing hospitality. I heard some ladies yesterday just having a great time in my kitchen. In our kitchen. Oops. Our kitchen. Having a good time. They were doing that very thing. In 1 Peter 4 and verse 9, be hospitable one another without complaint. I wouldn't complain about being hospitable and sharing what I have. Elders are to be hospitable people. 1 Timothy 3 and verse 2, an overseer then must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectful, hospitable, able to teach, not apt to teach. They're apt to teach this or that? No. They're able to teach, and they teach. Titus 1 verse 8, hospitable, loving what is good, sensible, just, devout, self-controlled. Now, some seem to think that only elders and preachers do this. In 1 Timothy 5 and verse 10, it says, having a reputation for good works. It's talking about older women being put on the account of the church, having a reputation for good works, and if she has brought up children, if she has shown hospitality to strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has assisted those in distress, and if she has devoted herself to every good work. Widows were to be like this. Women were to be like this. Hebrews 13 and verse 2, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by this some have entertained angels without knowing it. And you know what? I don't know that that can't happen today. I don't know that that can't happen today. What are they seeing in my house? Are they seeing good examples of good parents? Do they see profanity, gambling, dancing, fornication, immodest apparel, tempers, wagging tongues, covetousness? What do they see in? You see, parents owe it to their children to be Christians. We owe it to our children to be Christians. You see, no one lives a life without influence. In Romans 14 and verse 13, Paul writes, therefore let us not judge one another anymore, but rather determine this, not to put an obstacle or stumbling block in a brother's way. In fact, Jesus taught by example. Peter says in 1 Peter 2 and verse 21, for you have been called for this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in His steps. Paul and the other apostles also set the example. Paul even calls for people to be imitators of him in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 1. Be imitators of me just as I also am of Christ. I want you to notice he qualifies his, you imitating him. He qualifies it with Jesus Christ. As I follow Jesus Christ, you follow me. Where I'm not following Christ, don't you dare follow me. Why was Timothy such an outstanding young preacher? Well, look at 2 Timothy 1 and verse 5. 2 Timothy 1 and verse 5 says, for I am mindful of the sincere faith within you, which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I am sure that it is in you as well. Got started in the right place in grandma, and it moved to mom, and then it moved to him, didn't it? But I'm afraid there are some obstacles that get in the way sometimes in accomplishing these things. We have a competitive environment in which to live. We have activities which take children out of the home. School, games, football games, basketball games, soccer games, volleyball, plays, band, glee club, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts. I guess now girls can be Boy Scouts. I'm not sure how that works. 4-H clubs and on you could go. All the kind of dance studios, whatever it might be. Activities which take parents out of the home, business, community projects, recreational activities, social functions, all kinds of things that interfere with what's going on in the home. Things that are even in the home that compete with that difficulty. children's schoolwork, housework, newspapers, TV, etc., Xbox, computer games, all of these things. In fact, it has gotten so bad that people do not any longer sit down at the table and eat meals with the family. Everybody's in and out so much they don't have time to spend time with one another. We hardly see one another before we go to bed at night. Now, I want you to understand, these things are certainly needful. And they are certainly not sinful in and of themselves. But they must not take precedent over religious duties and privileges that we have as the children of God and responsible for fulfilling those responsibilities. Well, I'm afraid we have been influenced by worldly preachers who condone worldliness rather than condemning it. Unconverted church members, those who have been converted to faith, repentance, baptism in the Church of Christ, but have not learned that God's people are transformed. They're changed. Mothers who choose caring for their children instead of working outside the home if possible. And I understand. I understand. My wife worked in the home. Darlene worked in the home. I understand. Cheryl works outside the home. There's a difference in that relationship. There's a difference in those two relationships. And the time in those relationships as well. Some, of course, must work to provide the necessities of life. Some, on the other hand, want unnecessary material wealth. And that's what they're seeking after. This applies also to those who find work outside the home challenging, invigorating, and satisfying, while homemaking and child care are a drudgery to them. In fact, that reminds me of one woman that Darlene babysit for when we were in Plainfield, Indiana. In Plainfield, Indiana, we had this one mother of three children. The youngest child, unbeknownst to Darlene or myself, had a heart condition. He could have died on us at any time. When we found out, it was just plain scary what we'd been through. But anyway, this mother couldn't wait for holidays to be over so she could go back to work and get away from the kids. I'm sorry. I don't understand that. Now, I understand my grandchildren aren't my kids. I can't wait to go see my kids. In fact, I'm going this week. I'm leaving tomorrow. I'm going to be gone until Saturday. I am going to go play with some grandkids. I'm going to have a good time. I know they're going to have a good time because I intend us to have a good time. But you know, I enjoyed having fun with my kids. I'm not sure they always thought it was fun, going back in the woods and cutting trees down and sawing it up for burning in the stove. But we played ball. We played My Pretties. I'm going to get you My Pretties. New game. Lots of fun. Lots of fun. You need to spend time with your kids. I can't imagine a parent who, that is a hard thing to comprehend. I can't wait to go back to work and get away from my children. I'd love to have been able to spend all the time with my kids. Now, there are some times, please don't misunderstand. I know there were some times when it wasn't always fun. But we had a great time. In fact, I remember one time, I got to share this with you. I remember one time I was preaching on the east side of Indianapolis. And my son, my oldest son Ray, he's going to be here this next spring for our gospel meeting. You can ask him about it. We're getting ready to go home for dinner. Worship services are over. And he says, "Dad, Mom's not really done that good at cooking, so could we go out to eat today?" I said, "Oh my, no. If Mom's not that good at cooking, we better take her home so she can practice more." I think afterwards, he realized he'd said it the wrong way. No, We had a good time, had fun, lots of fun. You see, I don't propose to solve all the problems in this particular lesson. I think it's a beginning, a place to start. But you need to ask yourself, what do people see in your home when they come in? Do they see authority? Do they see love? Do they see companionship? Do they see the right kind of literature? Do they see a home filled with hospitality? Do they see a good example set by parents? In fact, we need to resolve to do what Hezekiah was told to do in 2 Kings 20 and verse 1. Set our house in order. And we need to keep in mind what Joshua says to the children of Israel as they've entered into the promised land and they've taken it over. In Joshua 24 and verse 15, he says, "And if it is disagreeable to you and in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves today whom you will serve, whether the gods which are your father served, which are beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you're living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Is your life what it should be? You see, that's the place it begins. Like I said, parents owe it to their children to be Christians. And if you're not a Christian, you're not coming up to the accountability that God's going to hold you to. God expects you to be the best parent you can be. And that begins by being obedient to Him. If you're not a Christian this morning, we would encourage you to become one. You know what you need to do? Do it. If you don't, sit down with us and talk to us about it. We'll help you. If you're a Christian already, but you've not been the parent you need to be or the child that you need to be, correct it. We talked about the fact that God is a merciful God. He wants to be merciful to us in Bible class this morning. He wants to extend mercy. He doesn't want to punish us. So receive His mercy by correcting your life with Him. Whatever you may need to do this morning, won't you come as we stand and sing?